In 10 years, the renowned Brookfield Zoo will celebrate its 100th anniversary. They may be planning a big party, but what the zoo is really planning is a $500 million upgrade to the West Suburban Institution. We're going to get a high-level preview this weekend. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. We are recording this edition of At Issue at Brookfield Zoo Chicago, and my host and guest is Dr. Michael Atkison, the zoo's president and CEO. He was appointed to the post in 2021, yes, in the middle of the COVID pandemic. He's a veterinarian by training, but that doesn't remotely cover it. He's an expert in animal care, medicine, science, research, and conservation. He's also an educator, and he is presiding over the opening phases of a 15-year endeavor called the Next Century Plan. To put it mildly, the zoo is being reimagined and upgraded, and Dr. Atkison is going to share that vision with us this weekend. Michael Atkison, thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. Glad to have you here today.
Well, as I understand it, the historical core of the Brookfield Zoo, Chicago, the north and south gates, the carousel and the fountain, those are all going to be preserved. But if I'm looking at the plan properly, it seems as if just about everything else is going to change.
We've got big plans. We wanted to dream big with this Next Century Plan and really look to reshape the zoo's campus. So that historical core that you mentioned there does stay the same. But as far as the rest of the campus, we've got big plans for most of it.
Well, how much is going to be new and how much is going to be different?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we sit on 235 total acres of land within the forest preserves of Cook County, and about half of that is really the developed footprint of what the regular zoo guests would experience as they spend time at the zoo. And we're really looking to fill out that whole footprint. So it's about 100 acres worth of space that we're looking at redevelopment, reimagination, and expansion out into. So it's a big part of our campus.
What is the overall philosophy that is guiding this transformation? I mean, besides the fact that these things have been around for 100 years, what is it that you're trying to do or say with the change?
So, you know, zoos have evolved dramatically from the time they were first conceived, and zoos were originally just purely for the sake of human entertainment, and we see that in a lot of the ways that historical zoos were arranged or designed, and even in some of our oldest facilities, like our Pachyderm building, you still see a very old style of keeping animals. And what we really are looking to do with this plan is to just break completely out of that mold into these very large, expansive, immersive experiences that provide spacious habitats for our animals, provide enriching opportunities for their daily lives, and then also create this incredible journey for our guests. So within these immersive ecoregions, we want our guests to feel like they've been transported to a different part of the world, to where those animals live, and really feel like they're part of that ecosystem. It's a big task to think that way, but for us, it's the core of what we do, and inspiring that caring and compassion from people and a sense of conservation or desire to protect the world around them.
Yeah, and you were touching on this. How is this responding to, I guess, the new thinking about keeping animals in captivity? I know, obviously, there are people, you know, animal rights people who say there should be no zoos, but I mean, we've talked about this before, that, you know, zoos play an important role in research and in preservation, but still, how you keep them makes a difference in their well-being.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the biggest roles that zoos fill beyond the science and beyond the conservation is just that sense of connection to the natural world. And, you know, we know most people that visit the zoo are never going to go on a African safari. They're never going to trek through a jungle in Asia or scuba dive with bottlenose dolphin. But we're able to provide those experiences and provide that connection. And in a society that's increasingly urbanized and nature is further and further away from so many people, zoos can fill that niche of bringing people close to wildlife, inspiring them to care and really want to protect those animals in the wild. And that's really at the core of our mission, is to inspire that sense of conservation desire. And we think that with this new way of housing our animals, it not only provides a better state of well-being for our animals in terms of the size of habitats and the interactions they have with other animals and the environment around them, but it also creates a more immersive and exciting experience for our guests that bring them along on that journey.
This is a phased development. Can you give us an idea of how that's going to play out?
Sure. So we are already well underway on phase one, which we're very excited about. So we've had some major projects here over the last year with the addition of koalas to the zoo, the Ferris wheel, the redevelopment of Roosevelt Fountain, our North American Prairie Aviary that opens this month. There's a lot of exciting things happening already within this first phase. But the biggest one of those is our current $66 million tropical forest project, and that project is outdoor expansive habitats for our gorillas, orangutans, and some of our monkey species. It's the biggest project we've ever undertaken as a single endeavor here at Brookfield Zoo in our history, and it's truly going to revolutionize that space, provide enhanced opportunities for our animals, an exciting experience for our guests, and it's packaged together with our Gorilla Conservation Center, as well as our King Conservation Leadership Academy, which is our education programming that spans all ages, but in particular is focused around our teen program in STEM education and career and college readiness. So this project is an example of not just new habitats for our animals, but it's new opportunities around conservation education, all of those things we just talked about. So as this first phase gets off the ground, we're, you know, well under construction already on tropical forests and are excited to be opening that next summer.
Now, let's talk a little bit about that, because Tropic World is one of the jewels of Brookfield. And I would expect it's also one of the most popular of the venues here. And it's all indoors.
Yeah.
I mean, it's big indoors, and it's indoors that mimics the habitat. But what you're building is outdoors.
Yeah.
How do you build that kind of environment outdoors, you know, and still be safe?
Yeah, so it's an excellent question. And Tropic World is, you know, it's a beloved gem of this organization, and it's not a building that we're, you know, planning to shutter. That experience is still going to be there. It will be a winter housing opportunity for some of our smaller monkeys. But what we're building outside is just going to be phenomenal. So it's 3 acres worth of space that is going to be developed out into these lush habitats with natural plant life, dirt. It'll be a chance for our gorillas to, you know, experience a whole new set of environmental parameters that they've never been exposed to before. You know, they've never had grass or leaves to play with, or the wind blowing through their hair. Those types of things are just a richness of being that we just can't replicate in Tropic World. And we really felt that as an organization, we needed to take that step to provide the best care opportunities for those animals and to get them into these new outdoor spaces. So
is it going to be, I won't say a culture shock for them, but yeah, I mean, when you go from that kind of environment where they are now to a place where it can rain,
yeah,
you know, is it going to be a difference for them?
It will be an adjustment for sure. And we're anticipating that, you know, it's not going to be a situation where we open the door and they run outside and, you know, are not trepidatious about it. So, you know, we've built into our project timeline time for them to sort of acclimate into those new surroundings, take it at their own pace as they sort of become familiar with that outdoor world. And I'm sure it's going to be a very emotional day for all of us when they do come outside and really fully settle into that space.
What's the timetable for the tropical debut?
Yeah, so we're looking at Memorial Day weekend of 2025.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about some of the other things, you talk about the ecoregions.
Yeah.
What are some of the other new regions that we're going to be able to see?
Yeah, we've got so many exciting things planned. The biggest one by far is what we're calling right now Gateway to Africa. That will be four different African ecoregions spanning from the grassland savanna to dense tropical forest to more of a woodland South African forest. And these are going to be tremendous amount of space, 35 acres worth of total property being redeveloped within these phases, and that provides these large outdoor habitats for some of our largest species, our hoofstock species, rhinos, giraffes, elephants, ostrich, zebras, in these mixed species environments where they'll be able to interact with other animals. It'll keep them stimulated. And then, you know, within that, it's a redevelopment of our current pachyderm building, and we're looking at that with a lens of no longer having animals in that building, but making it a public guest space that looks out over these savannas. And our idea is to really transport people into that environment. And then as they move through the trails, the animals will not always be in the same place. It will be closer to what it would be like out in the wild, where you don't ever know for sure what animal you're going to kind of see around the curve of the path or around the bend. And the ability to move animals around like that is, I think, going to be really exciting for our guests and also for our animals.
I think it's kind of interesting. In some ways, you're flipping the script on having the people inside the building and the animals
exactly
outside looking in.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to look at it. That's the 100-year evolution of where zoos have gone from our doors opening in 1934 to our centennial in 2034.
Another eco region is Australia.
Yeah.
I don't know that people automatically think of Australia when they think of places. You know, Africa comes to mind, Asia, yeah. But what is Australia going to be like?
Yeah, so Australia, we were one of the first zoos to have a group of animals focused around Australia in one of the first Australia houses. And this is a chance for us, again, to just open that space up outside and replicate kind of what you would find in southwestern Australia with sort of this brushland habitat where you'll find kangaroos, wallabies, emu, you'll find koalas, you'll find wombats, echidna, just a wide variety of animals that, you know, most of us are familiar with a kangaroo, but many people don't know those other species. And to be able to transport them into that landscape and share some of the incredible Australian animals that are on this planet is just a great opportunity.
What was the inspiration for Australia being one of the new areas?
Yeah, so one of our big focuses was the geography of where that building is located on our grounds. And as we look towards this African expansion and we look towards our centennial, we really wanted to reshape that arrival experience for our guests as well. So when our guests come in the north entrance of the zoo, we wanted to make that experience more seamless, quicker access into the park, a more fun journey as you immediately come into the park and you're stepping right into this Australian habitat, and then it transitions into African areas. And we're looking at a redevelopment around the north gate itself to put a more modern plaza around that historic gate, and then also to get our sea lions relocated up near the south gate, which is, I think, a wonderful arrival experience. As you first come in, they're always energetic, they're always active, they're happy, they're loud. Sea lions are something that just really connect with people right off the bat, and so they will be part of what we call the Pacific Coast of the Americas as a region, and it will talk about ocean conservation and shared threats between California coast and South American coast with seal, sea lion, and penguin conservation. And that opens up space where our sea lions are at right now for a dolphin expansion down the road, to be able to create another beautiful area attached to our current dolphin facility to expand the space for these animals, provide a environment that looks like the coast of Florida, where we run the Sarasota Dolphin Research Program, which is a 50-year program focused on conservation of marine mammals. And we really want to be able to showcase and highlight all the incredible work we do out in the field with dolphins.
You're listening to News Radio 780's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and we're at Brookfield Zoo Chicago talking with the head of the zoo about a major 100th anniversary remaking of the West Suburban Zoological Park. Dr. Michael Adkisson, one of the other things that I found interesting was this area of wildlife discovery. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because it's not just something for zoo visitors, is it?
No, it's the fun activity part of the zoo is the way we're sort of looking at this. Is these wildlife discovery zones include some incredible animal habitats. Most of them are focused around really letting our guests get up close and really make that emotional connection with animals. And that's everything from our goats in the children's zoo, which are a great way for young kids to just immediately fall in love with animals and get up close, to our bottlenose dolphin area, where our guests are certainly not, you know, having the same type of interaction as they are with the goats, but it's still an opportunity for them to really get to know our animals and understand the care that goes into our programs and the importance of what our dolphins are doing in terms of contributions to science and conservation. And so, you know, the wildlife discovery zones are anchored around these types of animal experiences, but they also have this these great opportunities to bring in new audiences. And that's one of the things that we really wanted to look at with this plan, was how to continue to bring new guests into the zoo, how to diversify our audiences. And as an organization, we are completely committed to the idea of that we're a zoo for all, and we want everyone in Cook County and beyond to feel welcome and to feel like they have a place here at the zoo. And through some experiences within these zones, we think it's a great way to help pull new people into the zoo, let them see everything that we do, and hopefully come back.
And I think anyone who is who spends any time at Brookfield gets to see that so much more of the educational content, especially under your leadership, has been brought to the fore. So you're always learning something, but this is like taking it to another level.
It is, yeah. And I think we've really got some amazing ideas planned for how to connect our guests in. The other one of the other zones is our conservation campus, and that conservation campus will showcase all of those education, research, science, and conservation programs. And it's a way for us to really talk about the work that goes on behind the scenes. Our longest running partner is the Forest Preserves of Cook County, and we do a tremendous amount of work with Forest Preserve biologists and staff with conservation of local species here in Cook County, as well as DuPage and surrounding counties. We're heavily involved in river otter conservation, Blanding's turtles. We're moving forward with a new prairie chicken conservation program. So just a lot of incredible work taking place right here in the Chicagoland area, and we want to be able to showcase that and tell those stories.
And I think you make the point that this is, it's not just the public seeing something, but you're actually having the researchers here.
Yes, that's right. And we've got incredible, incredible programs around our animal care and our animal welfare efforts, our conservation science, and to be able to sort of take those behind the scenes areas and make them the scene and bring our guests into those areas is exciting to all of us.
You know, full disclosure, my family has been, we've been members of the zoo since 1995, I want to say. So I want to also touch on a couple of other jewels so that people can hear what might be happening with them. One of the other ones is the Living Coast. I think you touched on a coastal exhibit, but what happens to the Living Coast?
Yeah, sure. Well, first off, thank you for the longtime membership. We always love to hear that, and I think it's so amazing how many people in Chicago connect with the zoo that way. The Living Coast is one where we do see the penguins eventually moving to this north east corner of the zoo within the Pacific coast of the Americas. We've got an incredible conservation program in Peru with Humboldt penguins, and we really want to be able to showcase that conservation work. The Living Coast itself, we've sort of tentatively been looking at as an opportunity to do an incredible Amazon-focused experience and to really keep that South American focus, but change the building and get it into a different ecosystem feel. That one's one that probably is going to fall a little bit beyond this 15-year initial phase, but I think that's it's a great example of how we wanted to think longer than just 15 years. So we talk about this plan as a 15-year plan, but with a 30-year vision. So we wanted to make sure that we were being very thoughtful in the areas that we weren't immediately touching, that we had a plan for what those could become down the road.
And one of the other ones that, in fact, we were just visiting, the swamp.
Yeah.
That's another one that draws people in. Yeah. That one has kind of been evolving. I don't know if it's planned, but that one is already making changes.
Yeah, we've made some adjustments there to really focus on just swamps of the world and not stay quite so tightly tethered to one geographical region with that building. This year, we added flamingos into that space, which is, you know, maybe not an animal that people think of as being in a swamp, but it's really that wetland story. And flamingos are an incredible animal, several species that are very endangered. So they're a great opportunity for us to talk about flamingos and just the state of coastal and swamp conservation globally. It is a building, too, that backs right up to our Hamill Family Nature Plaza, where this year we added a North American prairie aviary. We've added some turtle habitats into there, and we're really telling that local conservation story. And our river otters are right there in the swamp, too. And river otters are another one here in the Chicago area that we've been very focused on for the past several years. So being able to make that connection also tells an amazing story.
And then besides that, they're really fun. They seem to like having people.
They do. They absolutely do. Yeah.
How are you addressing climate change? Because I know that's an interest of yours.
Yeah.
And how is it folding into the message of this development?
Yeah, it's an amazing question. It's really, you know, all of our conservation programs really touch on climate change in some way or another, because it's just having global impacts for animals around the world in different ways. So, you know, it's an important message within our conservation story. It's also an opportunity for us to do better as an organization in terms of our own climate resiliency and sustainability of our operations. And so as we look towards this master plan, we're also looking to modernize so many aspects of our operations to be able to make sure that we're doing everything we can to you know, be a positive influence on climate change. We've, with our partners at the Forest Preserves of Cook County, we've embraced their next century plan around climate change and sustainability of operations, and we're looking to meet those same goals.
And I mentioned at the top, because we haven't talked about this part yet, but the price tag.
Yeah.
We're talking $500 million, really, $500 million, a little bit divided, sort of.
Yeah. It's a hefty price tag. You know, we are walking into it in a strong financial position. We've been working very hard around Tropical Forest, the campaign there. A lot of our costs right now are just, we have 100-year-old buildings. And so there's a tremendous amount of just general infrastructure need within the park. And we've been very fortunate to gain some public support behind modernizing that older infrastructure. And that, in combination with the private philanthropy, is our path forward to achieving that large price tag to make this dream into a reality.
How much have you raised so far?
So we're approaching the $200 million mark, including the Tropical Forest projects and those in phase one. So we feel like we're off to a fantastic start. We've got a long way to go, obviously, but we've also, you know, we've got a 10 to 15 year timeline as we look around our centennial in 2034 that we're targeting in around.
Another thing, I know one of the things that has been stated is that this is really looking at the experience of the visitors. How is new technology going to play into all of that? You know, it's I guess even getting in here is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, so really working hard to modernize that guest experience. We just rolled out a new app for our guests this summer, so that's an opportunity for us to better communicate with our guests in the moment, to help with wayfinding, to help make sure they're aware of different animal experiences that are happening throughout the day. We're looking to integrate that into our parking, into our ticketing system, so we really can get people parked and into the zoo as fast as possible when they arrive, so that they can start having fun, they can start learning inside the zoo rather than waiting in a line to get in. That app is also a great way for us to take technology to share those conservation messages. So as people are in a certain area looking at a certain animal or habitat, that app can push information to talk about current conservation issues, to talk about our programs and what we're doing, and most importantly, to talk about what they can do to help. So it's an opportunity to share that. You know, those simple changes that many of us can make in our everyday lives that really do have a cumulative major impact on conservation success.
I think one other thing that we can talk about is the fact that the zoo is not just, you know, something for people to come to, but you also are doing research and such. And can you bring us up to date on it? I'm assuming that that's not stopping while you're doing all this other planning.
Not at all. Quite the opposite. This plan really envisions a conservation strategy that is intimately connected into what we're doing on the campus, so that we can share those stories with our guests while they're here. I mentioned our Sarasota Dolphin program earlier. It's a great example of a program where for the past 50 years, that team has been working to advance our understanding around dolphins and marine conservation. We have programs in Peru that do much the same thing, focusing around marine conservation to protect sea lions, fur seals, and Humboldt penguins. We've got programs here locally in the backyard with some of those species I mentioned earlier. Our pangolin program in Africa is one that we're really looking to continue to grow. And pangolins are one of the most endangered species on the planet right now. They're heavily trafficked within the wildlife trade for their scales. And we've just seen catastrophic loss of pangolin populations. And we're one of only a very small number of zoos to house those animals. And we're actively working to build a sustainable population in zoos to help with education and public knowledge, but also to provide critical information on care and medical treatment of those animals to help with animals in their native habitats and local communities.
Do you see that mission expanding once you've got all the other things going?
The conservation focus is, it's really the core of what we do, and it's really the core of what zoos are today. So, you know, absolutely, we see that just continuing to grow year over year in terms of size, in terms of the number of animals we're working with, the number of regions around the globe, and really making sure that the animals that we have here at the zoo are connected to those programs so that we're able to share effective stories and conservation impact with our guests.
I think we're all going to be looking forward to seeing the developments and the new Tropic World.
Yes.
Which is like Tropic Universe now, I guess it's supposed to be. I would like to thank Brookfield Zoo Chicago President and CEO, Dr. Michael Adkisson, for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you want a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on Audacy.com. That's Audacy. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM. In 10 years, the renowned Brookfield Zoo will celebrate its 100th anniversary. They may be planning a big party, but what the zoo is really planning is a $500 million upgrade to the West Suburban Institution. We're going to get a high-level preview this weekend. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. We are recording this edition of At Issue at Brookfield Zoo, Chicago, and my host and guest is Dr. Michael Adkisson, the zoo's president and CEO. He was appointed to the post in 2021, yes, in the middle of the COVID pandemic. He's a veterinarian by training, but that doesn't remotely cover it. He's an expert in animal care, medicine, science, research, and conservation. He's also an educator, and he is presiding over the opening phases of a 15-year endeavor called the Next Century Plan. To put it mildly, the zoo is being reimagined and upgraded, and Dr. Atkinson is going to share that vision with us this weekend. Michael Atkinson, thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. Glad to have you here today.
Well, as I understand it, the historical core of the Brookfield Zoo, Chicago, the north and south gates, the carousel and the fountain, those are all going to be preserved. But if I'm looking at the plan properly, it seems as if just about everything else is going to change.
We've got big plans. We wanted to dream big with this Next Century Plan and really look to reshape the zoo's campus. So that historical core that you mentioned there does stay the same. But as far as the rest of the campus, we've got big plans for most of it.
Well, how much is going to be new and how much is going to be different?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we sit on 235 total acres of land within the forest preserves of Cook County, and about half of that is really the developed footprint of what the regular zoo guests would experience as they spend time at the zoo. And we're really looking to fill out that whole footprint. So it's about 100 acres worth of space that we're looking at redevelopment, reimagination, and expansion out into. So it's a big part of our campus.
What is the overall philosophy that is guiding this transformation? I mean, besides the fact that these things have been around for 100 years, what is it that you're trying to do or say with the change?
So, you know, zoos have evolved dramatically from the time they were first conceived, and zoos were originally just purely for the sake of human entertainment, and we see that in a lot of the ways that historical zoos were arranged or designed, and even in some of our oldest facilities, like our Pachyderm building, you still see a very old style of keeping animals. And what we really are looking to do with this plan is to just break completely out of that mold into these very large, expansive, immersive experiences that provide spacious habitats for our animals, provide enriching opportunities for their daily lives, and then also create this incredible journey for our guests. So within these immersive ecoregions, we want our guests to feel like they've been transported to a different part of the world, to where those animals live, and really feel like they're part of that ecosystem. It's a big task to think that way, but for us, it's the core of what we do, and inspiring that caring and compassion from people and a sense of conservation or desire to protect the world around them.
Yeah, and you were touching on this. How is this responding to, I guess, the new thinking about keeping animals in captivity? I know, obviously, there are people, you know, animal rights people who say there should be no zoos, but I mean, we've talked about this before, that, you know, zoos play an important role in research and in preservation, but still, how you keep them makes a difference in their well-being.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the biggest roles that zoos fill beyond the science and beyond the conservation is just that sense of connection to the natural world. And, you know, we know most people that visit the zoo are never going to go on a African safari. They're never going to trek through a jungle in Asia or scuba dive with bottlenose dolphin. But we're able to provide those experiences and provide that connection. And in a society that's increasingly urbanized and nature is further and further away from so many people, zoos can fill that niche of bringing people close to wildlife, inspiring them to care and really want to protect those animals in the wild. And that's really at the core of our mission, is to inspire that sense of conservation desire. And we think that with this new way of housing our animals, it not only provides a better state of well-being for our animals in terms of the size of habitats and the interactions they have with other animals and the environment around them, but it also creates a more immersive and exciting experience for our guests that bring them along on that journey.
This is a phased development. Can you Give us an idea of how that's going to play out.
Sure. So we are already well underway on phase one, which we're very excited about. So we've had some major projects here over the last year with the addition of koalas to the zoo, the Ferris wheel, the redevelopment of Roosevelt Fountain, our North American Prairie Aviary that opens this month. There's a lot of exciting things happening already within this first phase. But the biggest one of those is our current $66 million tropical forest project, and that project is outdoor expansive habitats for our gorillas, orangutans, and some of our monkey species. It's the biggest project we've ever undertaken as a single endeavor here at Brookfield Zoo in our history, and it's truly going to revolutionize that space, provide enhanced opportunities for our animals, an exciting experience for our guests, and it's packaged together with our Gorilla Conservation Center, as well as our King Conservation Leadership Academy, which is our education programming that spans all ages, but in particular is focused around our teen program in STEM education and career and college readiness. So this project is an example of not just new habitats for our animals, but it's new opportunities around conservation education, all of those things we just talked about. So as this first phase gets off the ground, we're, you know, well under construction already on tropical forests and are excited to be opening that next summer.
Now, let's talk a little bit about that, because Tropic World is one of the jewels Brookfield. And I would expect it's also one of the most popular of the venues here. Yeah. And it's all indoors.
Yeah.
I mean, it's big indoors, and it's indoors that mimics the habitat. But what you're building is outdoors.
Yeah.
How do you build that kind of environment outdoors, you know, and still be safe?
Yeah. So it's an excellent question. And Tropic World is, you know, it's a beloved gem of this organization, and it's not a building that we're, you know, planning to shutter. That experience is still going to be there. It will be a winter housing opportunity for some of our smaller monkeys. But what we're building outside is just going to be phenomenal. So it's 3 acres worth of space that is going to be developed out into these lush habitats with natural plant life, dirt. It'll be a chance for our gorillas to, you know, experience a whole new set of environmental parameters that they've never been exposed to before. You know, they've never had grass or leaves to play with, or the wind blowing through their hair. Those types of things are just a richness of being that we just can't replicate in Tropic World. And we really felt that as an organization, we needed to take that step to provide the best care opportunities for those animals and to get them into these new outdoor spaces. So
is it going to be, I won't say a culture shock for them, but yeah, I mean, when you go from that kind of environment where they are now to a place where it can rain,
yeah,
you know, is it going to be a difference for them?
It will be an adjustment for sure. And we're anticipating that, you know, it's not going to be a situation where we open the door and they run outside and, you know, are not trepidatious about it. So, you know, we've built into our project timeline time for them to sort of acclimate into those new surroundings, take it at their own pace as they sort of become familiar with that outdoor world. And I'm sure it's going to be a very emotional day for all of us when they do come outside and really fully settle into that space.
What's the timetable for the tropical debut?
Yeah, so we're looking at Memorial Day weekend of 2025.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about some of the other things? You talk about the ecoregions.
Yeah.
What are some of the other new regions that we're going to be able to see?
Yeah, we've got so many exciting things planned. The biggest one by far is what we're calling right now Gateway to Africa. That will be 4 different African ecoregions spanning from the grassland savanna to dense tropical forest to more of a woodland South African forest. And these are going to be tremendous amount of space, 35 acres worth of total property being redeveloped within these phases, and that provides these large outdoor habitats for some of our largest species, our hoofstock species, rhinos, giraffes, elephants, ostrich, zebras, in these mixed species environments where they'll be able to interact with other animals. It'll keep them stimulated. And then, you know, within that, it's a redevelopment of our current pachyderm building, and we're looking at that with a lens of no longer having animals in that building, but making it a public guest space that looks out over these savannas. And our idea is to really transport people into that environment. And then as they move through the trails, the animals will not always be in the same place. It will be closer to what it would be like out in the wild, where you don't ever know for sure what animal you're going to kind of see around the curve of the path or around the bend. And the ability to move animals around like that is, I think, going to be really exciting for our guests and also for our animals.
I think it's kind of interesting, and in some ways you're flipping the script on having the people inside the building and the animals
exactly
outside looking in.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to look at it. That's the 100-year evolution of where zoos have gone, from our doors opening in 1934 to our centennial in 2034.
Another eco region is Australia. I don't know that people automatically think of Australia when they think of places. You know, Africa comes to mind, Asia, but what is Australia going to be like?
Yeah, so Australia, we were one of the first zoos to have a group of animals focused around Australia in one of the first Australia houses. And this is a chance for us, again, to just open that space up outside and replicate kind of what you would find in southwestern Australia, with sort of this brushland habitat where you'll find kangaroos, wallabies, emu, you'll find koalas, you'll find wombats, echidna, just a wide variety of animals that, you know, most of us are familiar with a kangaroo, but many people don't know those other species. And to be able to transport them into that landscape and share some of the incredible Australian animals that are on this planet is just a great opportunity.
What was the inspiration for Australia being one of the new areas?
Yeah, so one of our big focuses was the geography of where that building is located on our grounds. And as we look towards this African expansion and we look towards our centennial, we really wanted to reshape that arrival experience for our guests as well. So when our guests come in the north entrance of the zoo, we wanted to make that experience more seamless, quicker access into the park, a more fun journey as you immediately come into the park and you're stepping right into this Australian habitat, and then it transitions into African areas. And we're looking at a redevelopment around the north gate itself to put a more modern plaza around that historic gate, and then also to get our sea lions relocated up near the south gate, which is, I think, a wonderful arrival experience. As you first come in, they're always energetic, they're always active, they're happy, they're loud. Sea lions are something that just really connect with people right off the bat, and so they will be part of what we call the Pacific Coast of the Americas as a region, and it will talk about ocean conservation and shared threats between California coast and South American coast with seal, sea lion, and penguin conservation. And that opens up space where our sea lions are at right now for a dolphin expansion down the road, to be able to create another beautiful area attached to our current dolphin facility to expand the space for these animals, provide a environment that looks like the coast of Florida, where we run the Sarasota Dolphin Research Program, which is a 50-year program focused on conservation of marine mammals. And we really want to be able to showcase and highlight all the incredible work we do out in the field with dolphins.
You're listening to News Radio 780's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and we're at Brookfield Zoo Chicago talking with the head of the zoo about a major 100th anniversary remaking of the West Suburban Zoological Park. Dr. Michael Adkinson, one of the other things that I found interesting was this area of wildlife discovery. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because it's not just something for zoo visitors, is it?
No, it's the fun activity part of the zoo is the way we're sort of looking at this. Is these wildlife discovery zones include some incredible animal habitats. Most of them are focused around really letting our guests get up close and really make that emotional connection with animals. And that's everything from our goats in the children's zoo, which are a great way for young kids to just immediately fall in love with animals and get up close, to our bottlenose dolphin area, where our guests are certainly not, you know, having the same type of interaction as they are with the goats, but it's still an opportunity for them to really get to know our animals and understand the care that goes into our programs and the importance of what our dolphins are doing in terms of contributions to science and conservation. And so, you know, the wildlife discovery zones are anchored around these types of animal experiences, but they also have this these great opportunities to bring in new audiences. And that's one of the things that we really wanted to look at with this plan, was how to continue to bring new guests into the zoo, how to diversify our audiences. And as an organization, we are completely committed to the idea of that we're a zoo for all, and we want everyone in Cook County and beyond to feel welcome and to feel like they have a place here at the zoo. And through some experiences within these zones, we think it's a great way to help pull new people into the zoo, let them see everything that we do, and hopefully come back.
And I think anyone who is who spends any time at Brookfield gets to see that so much more of the educational content, especially under your leadership, has been brought to the fore. So you're always learning something, but this is like taking it to another level.
It is, yeah. And I think we've really got some amazing ideas planned for how to connect our guests in. The other one of the other zones is our conservation campus, and that conservation campus will showcase all of those education, research, science, and conservation programs. And it's a way for us to really talk about the work that goes on behind the scenes. Our longest running partner is the Forest Preserves of Cook County, and we do a tremendous amount of work with Forest Preserve biologists and staff, with conservation of local species here in Cook County, as well as DuPage and surrounding counties. We're heavily involved in river otter conservation, Blanding's turtles. We're moving forward with a new prairie chicken conservation program. So just a lot of incredible work taking place right here in the Chicagoland area. And we want to be able to showcase that and tell those stories.
And I think you make the point that this is, it's not just the public seeing something, but you're actually having the researchers here.
Yes, that's right. And we've got incredible, incredible programs around our animal care and our animal welfare efforts, our conservation science, and to be able to sort of take those behind the scenes areas and make them the scene and bring our guests into those areas is exciting to all of us.
You know, full disclosure, my family has been, we've been members of the zoo since 1995, I want to say. So I want to also touch on a couple of other jewels so that people can hear what might be happening with them. One of the other ones is the Living Coast. I think you touched on a coastal exhibit, but what happens to the Living Coast?
Yeah, sure. Well, first off, thank you for the longtime membership. We always love to hear that, and I think it's so amazing how many people in Chicago connect with the zoo that way. The Living Coast is one where we do see the penguins eventually moving to this northeast corner of the zoo within the Pacific Coast of the Americas. We've got an incredible conservation program in Peru with Humboldt penguins, and we really want to be able to showcase that conservation work. The Living Coast itself, we've sort of tentatively been looking at as an opportunity to do an incredible Amazon-focused experience and to really keep that South American focus, but change the building and get it into a different ecosystem feel. That one's one that probably is going to fall a little bit beyond this 15-year initial phase, but I think it's a great example of how we wanted to think longer than just 15 years. So we talk about this plan as a 15-year plan, but with a 30-year vision. So we wanted to make sure that we were being very thoughtful in the areas that we weren't immediately touching, that we had a plan for what those could become down the road.
And one of the other ones that, in fact, we were just visiting, the swamp. Yeah. That's another one that draws people in. Yeah. That one has kind of been evolving. I don't know if it's planned, but that one is already making changes.
Yeah, we've made some adjustments there to really focus on just swamps of the world and not stay quite so tightly tethered to one geographical region with that building. This year, we added flamingos into that space, which is, you know, maybe not an animal that people think of as being in a swamp, but it's really that wetland story. And flamingos are an incredible animal, several species that are very endangered. So they're a great opportunity for us to talk about flamingos and just the state of coastal and swamp conservation globally. It is a building, too, that backs right up to our Hamill Family Nature Plaza, where this year we added a North American prairie aviary. We've added some turtle habitats into there, and we're really telling that local conservation story. And our river otters are right there in the swamp, too. And the river otters are another one here in the Chicago area that we've been very focused on for the past several years. So being able to make that connection also tells an amazing story.
And then besides that, they're really fun. They seem to like having people.
They do. They absolutely do. Yeah.
How are you addressing climate change? Because I know that's an interest of yours.
Yeah.
And how is it folding into the message of this development?
Yeah, it's an amazing question. It's really, you know, all of our conservation programs really touch on climate change in some way or another, because it's just having global impacts for animals around the world in different ways. So, you know, it's an important message within our conservation story. It's also an opportunity for us to do better as an organization in terms of our own climate resiliency and sustainability of our operations. And so as we look towards this master plan, we're also looking to modernize so many aspects of our operations to be able to make sure that we're doing everything we can to you know, be a positive influence on climate change. We've, with our partners at the Forest Preserves of Cook County, we've embraced their next century plan around climate change and sustainability of operations, and we're looking to meet those same goals.
And I mentioned at the top, because we haven't talked about this part yet, but the price tag. We're talking $500 million, really, $500 million, a little bit divided, sort of.
Yeah. It's a hefty price tag. You know, we are walking into it in a strong financial position. We've been working very hard around Tropical Forest, the campaign there. A lot of our costs right now are just, we have 100-year-old buildings. And so there's a tremendous amount of just general infrastructure need within the park. And we've been very fortunate to gain some public support behind modernizing that older infrastructure. And that, in combination with the private philanthropy, is our path forward to achieving that large price tag to make this dream into a reality.
How much have you raised so far?
So we're approaching the $200 million mark, including the Tropical Forest projects and those in phase one. So we feel like we're off to a fantastic start. We've got a long way to go, obviously, but we've also, you know, we've got a 10 to 15 year timeline as we look around our centennial in 2034 that we're targeting in around.
Another thing, I know one of the things that has been stated is that this is really looking at the experience of the visitors. How is new technology going to play into all of that? It's, I guess, even getting in here is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, so really working hard to modernize that guest experience. We just rolled out a new app for our guests this summer, so that's an opportunity for us to better communicate with our guests in the moment, to help with wayfinding, to help make sure they're aware of different animal experiences that are happening throughout the day. We're looking to integrate that into our parking, into our ticketing system, so we really can get people parked and into the zoo as fast as possible when they arrive, so that they can start having fun, they can start learning inside the zoo rather than waiting in a line to get in. That app is also a great way for us to take technology to share those conservation messages. So as people are in a certain area looking at a certain animal or habitat, that app can push information to talk about current conservation issues, to talk about our programs and what we're doing, and most importantly, to talk about what they can do to help. So it's an opportunity to share that. You know, those simple changes that many of us can make in our everyday lives that really do have a cumulative major impact on conservation success.
I think one other thing that we can talk about is the fact that the zoo is not just, you know, something for people to come to, but you also are doing research and such. And can you bring us up to date on it? I'm assuming that that's not stopping while you're doing all this other planning.
Not at all. Quite the opposite. This plan really envisions a conservation strategy that is intimately connected into what we're doing on the campus so that we can share those stories with our guests while they're here. I mentioned our Sarasota Dolphin program earlier. It's a great example of a program where for the past 50 years, that team has been working to advance our understanding around dolphins and marine conservation. We have programs in Peru that do much the same thing, focusing around marine conservation to protect sea lions, fur seals, and Humboldt penguins. We've got programs here locally in the backyard with some of those species I mentioned earlier. Our pangolin program in Africa is one that we're really looking to continue to grow. And pangolins are one of the most endangered species on the planet right now. They're heavily trafficked within the wildlife trade for their scales. And we've just seen catastrophic loss of pangolin populations. And we're one of only a very small number of zoos to house those animals. And we're actively working to build a sustainable population in zoos to help with education and public knowledge, but also to provide critical information on care and medical treatment of those animals to help with animals in their native habitats and local communities.
Do you see that mission expanding once you've got all the other things going?
The conservation focus is, it's really the core of what we do, and it's really the core of what zoos are today. So, you know, absolutely, we see that just continuing to grow year over year in terms of size, in terms of the number of animals we're working with, the number of regions around the globe, and really making sure that the animals that we have here at the zoo are connected to those programs so that we're able to share effective stories and conservation impact with our guests.
I think we're all going to be looking forward to seeing the developments and the new Tropic World.
Yes, yes.
Which is like Tropic Universe now, I guess it's supposed to be. I would like to thank Brookfield Zoo Chicago President and CEO, Dr. Michael Adkisson, for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you want a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on Audacy.com. That's Audacy. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.